Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to church. My name is Paul Fisher. I am serving as a treasurer here. I've been a member of this church since February of 2012. And if you are new to this church this morning or just checking us out, we invite you to stay afterwards. We have refreshments and all that in the Kate Worker Room. And if you want to learn more about Unitarian Universalism, we have a lot of pamphlets out here for you to check out if you want to. And we also have a book if you're looking to become a member. Right now, I would invite you to turn to your neighbor and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet. This morning we have in the pulpit, we have Reverend Sunshine Wolf. This is your friend. And now I would invite you to come to the microphone if you have any announcements for the good of the church.
Just to remind you that Fourth Saturday Lunch is next Saturday over here. I don't see anybody else, but bring stuff. Come to help. We need toilet paper always. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. We are having our Unity Circle downstairs today. We meet about 15 minutes after the service is over for about an hour and 15 minutes. Today's topic is manifesting your dreams. So if you're interested, join us. We're downstairs.
Okay, I'd like to invite anybody that would like to come to the microphone for any joys or milestones they'd like to share with us. Just keep in mind, we'll have time for sorrows and concerns in a bit.
It is a joy and a pleasure to be here. I'm getting to know the greater metro area a little bit better. I live in Florissant, but it has been an interesting week to be here, for sure. But I'm very grateful and excited to be amongst great colleagues here in the region, amongst an amazing congregation that I'm getting to know, and getting to know wonderful Unitarian Universalists doing amazing work already. So I'm glad to be able to join you in that. Thank you.
Now I'd like to invite anybody that wants to come to the microphone and share any sorrows or concerns that they've brought with them this morning.
Well, I guess I'd say my very favorite cousin, she's about my age, and her husband has been diagnosed with cancer. It's in his bone in one of his legs. They're working hard on it, and hopefully we'll get the best of it. It's especially terrible for him because he had a stroke some years ago and has never been able to work since that, has gotten better from it, but not totally well. So keep him in your prayers. His name is Tubb. That's what they call him, Tubb. Ernest Tubb. His name was Ernest, so everyone always calls him Tubb.
Okay, our prelude begins as Ben Heft lights our chalice. call to worship comes from number 417 in the Gray Hymnal. For the beauty of the earth, this spinning blue-green ball, yes, Gaia, mother of everything, we walk gently across your back to come together again in this place to remember how we can live, to remember who we are, to create how we will be. Gaia, our home, the lap in which we live, welcome us. Our first hymn is going to be led by our Reverend Sunshine Wolf. It's called Circle Round of Freedom.
How y'all doing this morning? Oh, wow. It's Sunday. It's early. I'm going to try that again. How y'all doing this morning? Ah, see, there we go. See, we're about to sing a spiritual, and you got to sing these things with energy, right? So I'm going to invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow. And we're going to do this where you're just going to kind of repeat after me, call and response style. Put your hymnals down. Yes, it's in your hymnal, but you do not need it. Circle round for freedom. Circle round for freedom. Circle round for peace. Circle round for peace. For all of us in prison. For all of us in prison. Circle for release. Circle for release. Circle for the planet. Circle for the planet. Circle for each soul. For the children of our children.
For the children of our children.
Keep the circle whole. Keep the circle whole. Okay, I invite you to scrunch up your faces as tight as you can. And then open as wide as you can. Do that again, tight and wide. Feel the blood rushing to your face? It's amazing, isn't it? It's almost as good as coffee, almost. All right, so I'm gonna start singing it, and as you're comfortable, you sing in, and here's the rule about this kind of music. Doesn't matter if you sing it exactly right, it matters that you sing it with spirit. You got it? Can you sing it with spirit? Thing about you is we got spirit when we're out marching in the streets, but when we're not sure about something, it kind of goes away. But you know that marching spirit, that's what we need. All right, here we go. Circle round for freedom. Circle round for peace. For all of us in prison. Circle for release. Circle for the planet, circle for each soul, for the children of our children. Keep the circle whole. Let's start with that, circle around the planet. Circle around the planet. Circle for each soul, for the children of our children. Keep the circle whole. May it be so. We got some great singers in this congregation.
Our responsive reading is number 666, The Legacy of Caring. I didn't deepen my voice. I was gonna. Despair is my private pain, born from what I have failed to say, failed to do, failed to overcome.
Be still, my inner self. Let me rise to you. Let me reach down into your pain and soothe you.
I turn to you to renew my life. I turn to the world, the streets of the city, the worn tapestries of brokerage firms.
Drug dealers, private estates, personal things with the bad ideas of the heart.
Rage and pain in the faces that turn from me, afraid of their own inner words.
The common world I love anew, as the lifeblood of generations who refuse to surrender their humanity in an inhumane world, courses through my veins.
From within this world, my despair is transformed to hope. Church. The offering will now come around.
With the gathering of the children, do they go anywhere after this? Yeah, because it's the summer, right? Yeah. Okay. Well, in that case, here's what I want to say. Raise your hand if you're a child in spirit. I find it interesting that none of the kids are raising their hands. Raise your hand if you're a child in body. Let's try that. Yeah, there they are. And some of them, yeah, okay. Here's the thing. I will tell stories. They will be intergenerational stories. I do not believe in telling a story on Sunday that isn't relevant to every single person in the pews. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to like every story I tell. You're Unitarian Universalists. If I say everything you like I say in the next 2 years, I'm not doing my job right. Okay? Right? And that goes for everybody. It doesn't matter who you are. At some point, you're not going to like something I'm going to say. I'm okay with that. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to like everything you're going to tell me either, and that's okay. This has been quite a week, hasn't it? I want to say that the sermon that was posted is not the sermon I'm giving today. Just, there's no way to pretend that a young man was not killed this week. There's no way to pretend that a town was made a spectacle of by a nation that tells stories. We live in a society that's broken, and we leave it to these kids who are sitting here. And my question is, what are each of us going to do to make sure that we leave them a better world than the one we received? What do we do to make sure that they are prepared and given the skills to face the world they are going into? Because we're not going to fix it in our lifetimes. They're not going to fix it in theirs. All we can do, Lou, is leave it better and better and better. That's what Dr. King did. That's what Cesar Chavez did. That's what so many people, even Jesus and Buddha, did. Left a legacy of something a little better than what they knew was possible. And so to you kids, what I say to you is hold our feet to the fire. The adults, they like to try and say, you should do this and you should do that, but the thing is, we're imperfect too, we make mistakes, and the same things we yell at you for, we do, or you wouldn't know how to do them. My favorite thing to tell teenage parents is, if you're yelling at them, they're probably doing something you do every day and hate. We embody the lessons. If we just speak them, we do not do enough. And Unitarian Universalists, we're good with words. But it's our actions that matter. So how many people like Harry Potter? I think Harry Potter is the ultimate Unitarian Universalist. Certainly J.K. Rowling is, whether she knows it or not. And in that story is an ancient story. Fox, right? Fox is the, what rises from the ashes? Phoenix is the phoenix, right? Dumbledore owns this phoenix named Fox. F-A-W-K-E-S for those who are not Potter world aware. And that story is that the fox, the phoenix, would routinely burn to bits and go into ashes. And then out of the ashes, new things would be born. Just like everything, right? Plants, they grow, they live, they die, they make fertilizer, and more plants grow. My favorite thing growing up on a farm in Indiana was, and this is going to sound weird, when the world smelled like pig poop. Because it meant spring. And you got used to the smell of pig poop. But here's the thing, and you probably, maybe you don't want to know this, but all the corn and the soybeans and all the vegetables you eat, the fertilizer they use is pig poop. But from that poop grows this amazing stuff that we love to eat. Things are born from the ashes. This week, a young man died. There is no undoing that. There is no fixing that. The question is, what do we do with the time we have now? What rises from those ashes? What becomes possible? Yeah, it's across the river, and some of you are not even from Missouri, and it has nothing to do with you, right? No. Because we're all interconnected. That's our seventh principle. And so what I want you to think about is, you are the phoenix. What are you going to do when you're reborn from the ashes? In times like these, I actually, I tend to pick up an essay by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King called A Testament of Hope. It was released after he passed on, and it was one of the last things he wrote. And as I was reading it a couple weeks ago, and then heard what happened, it was like serendipity. So I want to read to you a couple of parts that I think are relevant to us this week. He writes, "Men of the white West, whether or not they like it, have grown up in a racist culture, and their thinking is colored by that fact. They have been fed on a false mythology and tradition that blinds them to the aspirations and talents of other men. They don't really respect anyone who is not white, but we simply cannot have peace in the world without mutual respect. But there is no single answer to the plight of the American Negro. Conditions and needs vary greatly in different sections of the country. I think that the place to start, however, is in the area of human relations. This is a sensitive and touchy problem that has rarely been adequately emphasized. Virtually every riot has begun from some police action. If you try to tell people in most Negro communities that the police are their friends, they just laugh at you. Obviously, something desperately needs to be done to correct this. I have been particularly impressed by the fact that even in the state of Mississippi, where the FBI did significant training job with the Mississippi police, the police are much more courteous to Negroes than they are in Chicago or New York. Our police forces simply must develop an attitude of courtesy and respect to the ordinary citizen. If we can just stop policemen from using profanity in their encounters with black people, we would have accomplished a lot. In the larger sense, police must cease being occupation troops in the ghetto and start protecting its residents. Yet very few cities have really faced up to this problem and tried to do something about it. It is the most abrasive element in Negro-white relations, but it is the last to be scientifically and objectively appraised." The words of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, 1964. I invite you now into a time of meditation, prayer, or contemplation as your own personal spiritual practice. I invite you to just get comfortable. I invite you to notice your body on the pew or on the bench, wherever you may be. I invite you to open your ears. What do you hear? I hear creaks. I hear movement. I hear what I think is the air conditioning. What do you feel? Are you warm or cold or just right? Do you notice pain or aching? I invite you to take a deep breath in and out. And now a deep breath in so your neighbor can hear you. In and out. And one more time. In and out. O spirit of life, still small voice within us and all that is beyond our capacity to know. We are aware of this day in a time of trial and uncertainty, of violence in our streets, of unkind words between our neighbors, of a nation fraught with uncertainty and mythology. We ask for grace this day, and we take gratitude in the light of the voices of infants and children, the wisdom of elders and those of experience. We offer gratitude for the presence of each person sitting here today. We offer gratitude for this life and for the gift of this earth, for the life-giving rains that fall from the sky, for abundance and beauty. We look inside ourselves and ask for guidance to help the world see the diversity and wonder in each person, the value of difference, and the hope that we can transform the world. In this day, we ask for presence and guidance, and for those in this community living with illness, pain, grief, fear, may you know that we are here for you. May you reach out to us May you lay your burdens here, if just for a little while. And for those in times of celebration and gratitude, joy and triumph, may you share your blessings. May you help us see the light in the world. May we be in community today and together for always. I invite you now into a time of silent prayer, meditation, or contemplation, as is your own personal spiritual practice. And as we come back into this space, we offer gratitude for a few moments of silence and respite, for too often we go moment to moment without simply being present. So we offer gratitude for this time and for one another. And as we go forth, may we pass our light onto the world. May it be so, and blessed be. I invite you again to rise as your spirits and bodies allow. Since we're coming out of meditative time, take a moment to stretch if you need to, whatever you need to kind of get back into this space. The Macarena, I like that one. All right, it's hymn number 95, There's More Love Somewhere.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I spent July working on sermons for August. I'd been thinking about the sermon I was going to give today, and then all of a sudden, boom, life happened. And I have to tell you, it doesn't matter who you are, first sermon in a church is scary enough as it is. So I have been stressing about this sermon all week. My question to myself was, what do I have to say about this? More specifically, what does Unitarian Universalism have to say about this? One of the things that I know is the circle's broken again. Circles upon circles broken again. And where do we find the strength to repair them? How do we move forward knowing that even upon repair, some of these circles will break again and again and again? How do we keep the circle whole? How do we keep trying for a world transformed by our hands, our hearts, our minds, and our spirits? In that same essay by Dr. King, he starts it by saying that people found it surprising that he identified as an idealist, as an optimist. He would be asked, why, in the face of everything that has happened, would you be an optimist? How could you imagine things better? And he said, look at where we were 100 years ago. African Americans, you know, I never had to be a chattel slave, he said. And he had seen improvement in his time. On the night before his death, in a very famous sermon he gave, he said, I may not reach the mountaintop with you, but we will get there. He had hope not for transformation in his lifetime, but for transformation in the future, because he had seen improvement from the lives of his grandparents and beyond. Change happens, and in his mind, humanity improves over and over again. Not that onward, upward, into the future forever, but in that messy complex, we argue and we fight and we push and we take a stand, and ultimately things change. As it's said in Battlestar Galactica, it has all happened before, and it will all happen again. So say we all. Circles within circles, happening again and again, over and over. We repeat these lessons. We struggle. We try. I've been here all of 3 days. And they have this weird thing where they tear out part of the wall so that you can get the bed upstairs in my apartment complex. Weirdest thing. You can ask Kelly and Juliet about that. They've had that experience as well. And the painter came in to repair it and put everything back together again. Now, I am the lightest skinned person in my complex, as far as I can tell. And I like that. I from a multiracial family, I really like living in diverse community. But he made whatever assumptions he made, and he asked me what I did. And I said, well, I'm a minister. He said, oh, they need that around here in this neighborhood. And I said, why? He said, well, it's a bad neighborhood. Now, I'm not from around here, and I have not yet learned, I now know, what a bad neighborhood means. And so we start talking about places, and he said, yeah, well, you know, those places like Philadelphia and New York and Atlanta and Oakland. I said, well, I lived in Oakland, loved it, and Atlanta's an amazing city, and suddenly we had nothing to talk about. Racism lives. And of course, a bad neighborhood meant a black neighborhood. And all I could do in that moment was not tell him he was wrong. That would do no good. All I could do was embody an example of someone who said, no, this is not okay, in a way that he could hear. And saying that I loved Atlanta seemed about as good as I could do in that moment with a complete stranger. We do what we can do. It was January 2009, and I was back in Oakland for a seminary conference. On December 31st, just miles, I'm sorry, January 2010, on December 31st, just 5 miles from where I lived, a young man named Oscar Grant was shot in the back while lying face down, cuffed on the ground at the Fruitvale BART station. My home congregation at the time, the First Unitarian Church of Oakland, along with other area congregations, worked together to train people in how to help maintain peaceful protest. Not that it seemed to matter. You see, what we came to learn was that some anarchist groups and other troublemakers took advantage of the protests against Oscar Grant's death as an opportunity to cause chaos. It was reported locally as such, that it was not the protesters who caused the riots. However, this did not fit our national narrative on race and never seemed to be adequately covered in the national news. We marched peacefully for the support of yet another young black man killed at the hands of police. Officers born into a social narrative that tries to tell us one simple thing: young black men are dangerous. And I go back again to Dr. King's words about human relations, and that one of the first places we need to start is with police relations. And I think if he was saying that in 1964, and it's 2014, what are we doing wrong? Where is that conversation? And yet, I agree with him. Just as in Mississippi, police officers learn to be courteous, living in Montgomery, Alabama, as an out, transgender, queer person, it was one of the only cities I felt safe in knowing I could go to any police officer and report something, and it would be taken seriously. I lived in San Francisco, Oakland, Tucson, Indianapolis, all over the country. I could never be sure of a police officer. But because Montgomery had gone through the experiences it had gone through in the civil rights movement, because its police officers were trained in the history of the city and in how to be in healthy relationship with its citizens, I knew, and I even told a newspaper so, that I could go to a police officer, any one of them, and ask for help, and they would take it seriously. I don't think I could even say that about where I live now. We need to do more. It isn't to blame the police entirely. Don't get me wrong. What I am saying is that it's systemic, that it's something that we're all born into. Circles upon circles broken 50 years ago. And unless we face them head on, how do we expect them to be repaired? I know many people who were activists in the 60s, 70s, and even more recently, frequently feel despair. But we did so much, and so much has changed, and we tried. And there may even be some frustration that more hasn't changed in our lifetimes. I find helpful the words of Sharon Welch, in both thinking about how to deal with the fact that so little seems to have changed, but also to remember how much we can change. Reverend Dr. Sharon Welch is a professor at Meadville Lombard, and she writes this: I am proposing a simple change in vision. Rather than denouncing or bemoaning the partiality and weaknesses of others' responses, let us see them as something to be responded to, played with, and worked with. Where does this leave us in our work for social justice, in our attempts to build and sustain community? We are not ushering in a new age. We are not part of some grand cultural revolution. We are not fighting the war to end all wars. We are, quite simply, like all the generations before us and all the generations that come after, learning to walk. Learning to walk. With the realization that if we run, we might go too fast for any real change to be possible. But if we walk, if we learn to walk and we stumble and we fall, and we learn from those stumbles and those falls, more change is possible. More circles come into focus. Racism today is insidious. It is hard to see or even to confirm at times. And I want to be clear about my definitions of what I'm saying here, because there are so many different understandings of race and racism, and you know, you listen to the pundits and they get all defensive, oh, I'm not a racist. Well, first off, all of us, every single person in the United States at least, has racial prejudice as part of their lives. Not because we wanted it, not because we asked for it, because it's something that we learned even before we had language. And those things we learn before we have language, those are the hardest things to undo, to unlearn. Racism is not just racial prejudice. It's racial prejudice plus the power to enforce it, whether you want that power or not. So, for example, if you are a white person, you live and grew up as a white person, whether you want the power that comes with being white or not, you have it. It's the way society works. It's the assumption. And what this does is it describes a system of racial prejudice that favors one group, in this case Caucasian Americans, as normal, as hegemonic. The author of Is God a White Racist? Unitarian Universalist Reverend Dr. William R. Jones writes this: I endorse and advance as the foundation for Unitarian Universalism's anti-racist imperative an opposing school of thought, the disguise hypothesis, which sees not racism's demise, but its disguise. From this vantage point, institutional racism is not in remission or even declining, as is commonly believed. Rather, it is a mutating and reclaiming lost territory through ingenious disguises, conceptual camouflages, and hypocritical masks for moral vulnerability. And so as an example, I'm going to invite you to consider a few questions. And feel free to answer aloud if you're comfortable. And take a minute to really think about the question. And the first one is this: list all the basic institutions in the United States, and basic, I mean just kind of the normal everyday things we experience, that Black Americans have created or controlled for four generations or 200 years. I can think of the AME Church. It's probably about all I can think of. Anybody got any others? Now list all the basic institutions in the United States that white Americans have created and are controlled for six generations, or about 300 years. That one's easier. Federal government, most of our universities, police. Yeah? Banks. Post office. Any others? Everything? Okay. Right. Okay. List all the basic institutions in the United States that Black Americans have created and controlled over the course of one generation. In other words, 25 years, under which white Americans had to live. So they created it, and white Americans had to live under it. Probably a couple of colleges. I know Tuskegee in Alabama has a few white faculty and students. So probably about it, maybe a couple of churches, some companies. List all the basic institutions in the United States that white Americans have created and controlled over six generations, 300 years, under which Black Americans had to live. And again, you can go back to some of those same institutions, right? The point of that exercise is to point out that it's systemic. It's not something that is just about individual racism or what someone says. It's something we're born into. And the way that Lillian Smith, a white southerner from South Carolina and Georgia, put it was that it's like a tree that is forced to grow in wire that makes it grow gnarled and malformed. And you can cut the wire away, But over the course of the next 200 years of that tree's growth, it's never going to really fully straighten back up again. Right? Its children have that chance, but it never really does. But it requires a cutting away of the wire. And the civil rights movement did do a lot, and there's still a lot of wire. This neo-racism is insidious. It's hard to see. It guides our assumptions and our actions and our cultures. And to counter the effects, we need to run toward it and not away from it, as has been most commonly the practice. It requires courage to do this, to fight our reptilian brains who say fight or flight are the only answers, and to engage our hearts and our minds to the task. In fact, in listening to Michael Brown's parents this week, that was exactly what they asked for. Our presence, our minds, our hearts. For as long as we let our society go on without reflection, without reparation and connection, we will be doomed to create over and over again the inequalities we have inherited. To borrow from those European narratives in our story today, rather than the phoenix recreating the world anew from the ashes, we will be like Sisyphus, rolling the same rock up the mountain again and again, thinking it's a different boulder this time. Circles within circles. Alfred North Whitehead observed that there are times when violence is a last resort in personal or national defense. He also reminded us that most violence can do is stop something, like a violent aggressor. But it can never create. It can never bring peace into being. It can never repair what has been lost. Love is the active, creative force that repairs life's injuries and brings new possibilities into being. Love generates life. From the moment of conception to the moment when we remember with gratitude and tenderness those who have died. And in the darkest night, when our hearts are breaking, love embraces us even when we cannot embrace ourselves. Love saves us and directs us towards generosity. The hope is this: love in its myriad forms recalls us to life. And ultimately, in repairing the circles that are broken, that is what we're called to, living life. And we're about 15 minutes into my sermon, and I'm sure some of that life is fading away. Called to life. Love is messy and difficult. Love includes pain as well as joy. Love calls us to our highest ideals. Not to be too cheesy, but as the 80s song goes, love lifts us up to where we belong. Love calls us to forgiveness, yes. But it also calls us to accountability. That so little and so much has changed in regards to race is a sign that we have a long way to go, y'all. Each of us is born into this water of racism or internalized oppression. And we are called to stay fully present to the struggle, most especially because it is a complicated mess, or as some of my Southern siblings like to say, a hot mess. The important thing that any of us who have loved someone over the course of years knows is love isn't easy. And it takes time and energy, right? Think about that person you love most. Have you always liked them? We can be angry and still love. My mother loves to tell me the story about every time I talked to her on the phone. She remembers when I was 5 years old and she had done something to make me angry, and she said, I don't love you and you don't love me. And she said, I still love you. And I said, you can't love me, I'm mad at you. And she said, but I still love you. And that made me madder than anything else. And I'm sure you've had those moments where you're like, darn it, I still love you. We can set boundaries and still love. We can say no and still love. And really, that's what we're talking about when it comes to making these changes and calling to all institutions, not just the Ferguson police, but institutions across the country to say, love matters, and it isn't easy, but it's that love that keeps our country going forward. It makes this country worth being a part of. Native American theologian Dr. George Tinker explains that in addiction, one of the guidelines is that it takes the same amount of time to recover and repair the damages of addiction as it did to be actively lost in addiction. In other words, if you were an active alcoholic for 10 years, then it will take 10 years of recovery to have come to a place of full reconciliation, wholeness, practice, and healing. He argues that the same thing is true of racism, or really any oppression. The United States society became addicted to the need to hold up a narrative or delusion that supported the structures of race and racism. And it has remained addicted for over 500 years. So we got a long time to go yet. This delusion has maintained society so much so that Thomas Jefferson was able to create a narrative of racism as scientifically proven, and then science went forth and proved it, even though we know today that there is absolutely no scientific basis for the concept of race. Another circle broken and needing mended. So much so that genocide and theft of lands became a part of a heroic narrative of the Western frontier of manifest destiny. Another circle broken and needing mended. So much so that the myths that African-American young men are violent and dangerous have been depicted over and again in the news and in entertainment media. Another circle broken. The list of overt and covert ways in which racism is manifest in this country is long. And to repair these circles takes time, but most importantly, it takes bravery. In the face of what seems hopeless, we are called to rise on the side of love and make the circle whole. Not some perfectly round circle, but a messy, uneven, and beautiful circle of worn hands, hearts broken open, questioning minds, and embracing spirits. We are the ones we've been waiting for. We are the ones, we are the ones. We've been waiting. Keep the circle whole. What we know as Unitarian Universalists is that community and love are about accountability, forgiveness, and most importantly, practice. In the words of Francis David, we need not think alike to love alike. In a day and age when so many are calling for a morality that requires that we all believe alike, in a day and age when we fill our days with business rather than presence, in a day and age when difference is at once embraced and yet hegemony is the order of the day, in this day our message of engagement, of inspiring love and seeking justice and acting hopefully are salvific. We can save lives, not in some fancy new world to come, but in this world today. We can say yes to life. We simply must remember and help the world remember that we are imperfect. That's the way it is. If you want to be a perfectionist, good luck. You're just going to make yourself sick. We are imperfect, and it will take time. But we can heal some and begin to heal others. In the words of Edward Everett Hale, I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do. We can do the something we can do. We can learn and speak about how racism has transformed itself today. We can walk with Michael Brown's family in the city of Ferguson and with all communities affected by violence. And we can call on the police to find new ways forward and to hold their officers accountable. We can find ways to make the circle whole, not through words and rhetoric, but through presence and engagement, not through misinformation, but through trust and accountability, not through aloneness, but together. We can make the circle whole for ourselves and for generations to come. May it be so. Take a deep breath. I promise not to be so hardcore next time. I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow. I'm going to teach you a song that I learned in the Poverty Truth Commission work that I've done. It was written by one of the women who's active in it. There's a part where it says, hand in hand. Now, if you are sick, or you're an uber introvert, or you're part of a faith tradition where holding hands is not appropriate, you just put your hands up like this. And if you are a person who loves holding hands and you see this, just put your hand up next to him, but don't touch him, okay? I love holding hands. It's one of the things I like to do, but I also want to make sure it's safe for all people to be in community and that we allow for difference. So either this or this, whatever you like. And so just repeat after me. We're going to sing this probably more times than you would like to. It's the nature of the song. It's what's supposed to happen. At some point, we sing it so many times, it starts to become like breathing, and that's what we're shooting for. You willing to go with me on that?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Some of you are like, I'm not answering that until I do it. I know you use. All right, so here we go. You just repeat after me. We shall not give up the fight we have only started. We shall not give up the fight we have only started. 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 We shall not give up the fight we have only started. We shall not give up the fight we have only started. 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 Okay, so that's the hymn. That's how it goes. And there's one other verse. It goes, and so you just sing it as you feel like you're ready to sing the second verse. It goes like, together we'll have victory, hand holding hand. Hand holding hand, hand holding hand. Together we'll have victory, hand holding hand. Hand holding hand, hand holding hand. You got it? At least the basics. And like I said, we'll sing it so many times that you'll be sick of it, so by that time you'll know it. All right. We sing each of those lines twice. So each verse is, we sing it twice and then we switch to the other one. And then as you're comfortable, start taking hands when we get to that point. We good? Let's do it. We shall not give up the fight we have only started. We have only started. We have only started. We shall not give up the fight we have only started. We have only started. We have only started. I messed up. I was clapping on the one and not the two. Important with this kind of a song. We shall not give up the fight. Ready? We shall not give up the fight. We have only started. We have only started. We have only started. We shall not give up the fight. We have only started. We have only started. We have only started. Together we'll have victory. Hand holding hand. Hand holding hand. Hand holding hand, together we'll have victory. Hand holding hand, hand holding hand, hand holding hand, together we'll have victory. Hand holding hand, hand holding hand, hand holding hand, together we'll have victory. Hand holding hand, hand holding hand, hand holding hand, we shall not. We shall not give up the fight we have only started.
We have only started. We have only started. We shall not give up the fight we have only started. We have only started. We have only started. We shall not give up the fight we have only started. We have only started. We have only started. We shall not give up the fight. We have only started.
So I'm trying to figure out how I want to do this. I invite the folks on this half and these folks to face each other, and the folks in this half and that side face each other. Wave at your neighbors. Introverts, please don't hate me too much. Actually, Unitarian Universalism has the highest number of introverts of any denomination. I invite you to smile and wave at your neighbors. This is our sacred community. These are the people that make it possible. These are the people that help make the circle whole. Yes, it is difficult. Yes, there is struggle, but there is joy and there is triumph in our singing, in our dance, in our connections, in our hope. Don't look at me, look at each other. So easy to do. I am not this community. You are. So go forth this week knowing that these people are here for you. Know that you are not alone. And come to us in this week or in the weeks to come, knowing that we will be here for you. May you be blessed, and may you carry the light of love out into the community, because goodness knows it needs it. Say yes to life. Yes to life. Shout that. Yes to life. May it be so. Our service has ended. Our worship has ended. Let our service begin. And our postlude.